Thanks for joining us on Streamlines, your source for water knowledge. I'm your host, John McMain, with South Dakota State University Extension. This is episode 4. Well, hello everyone again. This is John McMain.
And Anthony Bly.
And today's topic, Anthony, is saturated buffers.
Well, that sounds like a good one, John.
It is a good one. It's one of my favorite conservation practices, although I would say probably that they're all my favorite conservation practice, but saturated buffers, I feel like, do have a lot of advantages over other conservation practices.
Sure.
And we're going to get into those today, but let's start out kind of just get people thinking about saturated buffers. What do you think about when you think about a saturated buffer?
Well, I think of it as a water quality management tool for drain tile.
And that's exactly what it is. And I think of them a lot of times kind of in conjunction with bioreactors because they use a lot of the same mechanisms as a bioreactor. So you have denitrification in a bioreactor. You have denitrification in a saturated buffer. But one major difference is you're not bringing in new material for a saturated buffer. You're using what's already there, which is a really nice benefit. Doesn't cost as much, doesn't require as much input.
And vegetation as well.
That's an excellent point, Anthony. Right. And you have more utilization of the space with a saturated buffer than you maybe would with a bioreactor. Mm-hmm. And you get some nutrient reduction because of that vegetation. So to tell our story about saturated buffers today, I got in touch with my good friend, Dr. Yaba Kjarsgaard. He's with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'll let him introduce himself.
My name is Yaba Kjarsgaard. I work as a research scientist with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Yaba has worked on saturated buffers for probably close to 10 years now. Some of you may or may not know, he was in South Dakota before he was in Minnesota and actually put in some of the first research saturated buffers in South Dakota. And so his background goes back quite a ways, but he also has some pretty exciting current projects that he's working on.
A primary one is a research and demonstration project we have near Breckenridge in northwest central Minnesota. It's about 30 miles northeast of Rushholt in Roberts County in South Dakota. And at this location, we installed a saturated buffer back in 2016, and then we've been monitoring it ever since. And we are finding that that buffer removes about 90% of the nitrate of the drainage water that we are routing through it. But now we do have a bypass installed on it to route excess water around the saturated buffer when there's more water coming through the tile than what the capacity of the buffer to handle is. And so if we factor that water in, we are removing over 75% of the total amount of nitrate that is coming off.
So treatment efficiency of 90%, total load reduction of 75%.
That's pretty impressive.
That's pretty impressive, yeah. And especially for a system that, again, is completely working on the natural conditions of what's there. It's not like they had to spike this system with any, you know, special microbes or anything like that. They're putting tile on the ground in a certain orientation, forcing water a certain way, and it is doing its thing, which is is nice. So there's been a fair amount of research on saturated buffers, and the research so far shows that it's a kind of viable and cost-effective practice. But that was another question I asked Yaba, was what is kind of the motivation for farmers to put in a saturated buffer?
So if a landowner has concerns about the nitrate losses from a field, a saturated buffer is a very viable option. We are also often seeing situations where a downstream landowner has concerns about a tile installation, and in some cases that concern relates to nitrate that's coming off in the drainage water. And so in those situations, a saturated buffer could be a very good option also. And then it comes back to, you know, environmental stewardship as well, that you certainly want to have a profitable agricultural production. But at the same time, there are concerns about some of the negative environmental impacts. And we are starting to seeing in some states and even at the federal level discussions about potential regulation. Now, there's still active research taking place, among other things, characterized, well, what are some of under which conditions might saturated be most effective? But I think the research we have seen so far is that it is a very viable practice and very cost-effective practice. And we are starting to see installations among individual landowners that are doing it, either on their own account or with cost share, either from the NRCS or local soil conservation district.
So as a farmer, and as someone who works with farmers a lot, Anthony, I guess maybe put yourself in a farmer's shoes. How would you view a saturated buffer from that perspective?
I think if you've got the right situation to put one in, I think it'd be very compelling to do that. A lot of the outlets that I know prior to that outlet, there may be some low ground or some area that we could set up the buffer in.
You know? Yeah, and that is kind of an ideal situation because one thing we haven't gotten into yet, but saturated buffers, the way they work, on your main, you put in a control structure, and then you run laterals parallel to the stream or ditch from that control structure. And so then the water is able to run through the buffer rather than just outletting directly into the stream or ditch.
Right.
And so because you have that control structure, if you don't have kind of a drop once you get closer to the stream, you could potentially backwater up into the field and kind of lose your drainage advantage. But if you have that drop, then you don't have to worry about that. You're not backing water up into the field at all. You're instead backing it up into the buffer pretty much exclusively, and then it's able to work as that saturated buffer. So
it's just an artificial wetland in a way.
In some ways it is. Yeah, it's kind of a subsurface flow artificial wetland. Mm-hmm. You don't have saturated conditions at the top, but you have a lower layer that's saturated. And so exactly, you get the microbial communities you would see in a subsurface flow artificial wetland. You even can get some similar vegetation and microbial interaction, kind of the biogeochemical reaction, which is the one that drives the nitrate reduction in that situation. So like I mentioned at the top of the episode, in my opinion, saturated buffers have a fair number of advantages over some other conservation drainage practices. I mentioned this to Yaba, and he thought the same thing too. And so I'll let him give his take on what some of those advantages are.
Different conservation practices have different circumstances where they may work, and there might be other situations where they do not work. And it typically depends on both the specific location or land form or land available or preferences of the landowner, as well as cost. Some of the advantages that saturated buffers have is that they are very effective in removing nitrates, and they utilize an existing buffer. So they're utilizing land that typically acts as a buffer strip already along a stream. So in many cases, you do not need to take additional land out of production to install a buffer. And then another advantage is it can be combined with other conservation drainage practices. For example, controlled drainage, in which case you are not only removing nitrate from the drainage water, but you're also adding additional agronomic benefits. It is also fairly inexpensive to install and has low maintenance. One of the ones I'm currently working with, it cost about $2,000 to install, and about half of that was cost shared by our local soil and water conservation district. So compared to other practices, it is a relatively inexpensive practice to install. It's also simple to install. You're using a regular tile plow and tile pipe. You do need a control structure, but everything else you're using is really something that's part of your regular tile install. And then another advantage is also that the buffer itself can be utilized for other activities, such as a person could hay it or graze it if they wish. We have seen on the one we have seen an increase in biomass just because there is more water available throughout the growing season. Also, the saturated buffer we have, our collaborator landowner has installed a pollinator habitat on part of it. So there's kind of additional benefits that way.
So, yeah, they're a good practice. They got a lot going for them.
Yeah, effective.
Yep.
Relatively cheap.
Yep. There's some co-benefits potentially. I mean, you know, vegetation, you can use that land, pollinator habitat, as we heard. So a lot of the reasons that someone wouldn't install a conservation drainage practice could be cost, could be maintenance, could be loss of the use of a land. Really, all those are taken care of in a saturated buffer. I mean, there is still some cost, but it's relatively minimal if you're looking, you know, $100,000 drainage installation project $2,000, $3,000 is a very low percentage. I mean, that's right. That's error, right. Basically.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. And then as far as utilizing the land, especially if it's kind of a acting buffer area, I mean, that's already out of use, or if it's being hayed or something like that, like you can actually continue to use that land. I mean, it's a buffer that can be used for habitat or pollinators or whatever the case would be. So
yeah, exactly.
It checks a lot of the boxes, in my opinion, of why we could put a conservation drainage practice in. It removes some of the barriers, I guess.
Yeah.
So having said all that, saturated buffers are not perfect everywhere. As much as I love saturated buffers, you can't put them in everywhere. There are situations that are better suited than others. And Yaba talked some about that as far as kind of ideal widths, situations where it wouldn't be good to install a saturated buffer. And I'll just let him discuss that.
So there are certain criteria that has to be met for to identify a location for where a saturated buffer will work. Now, typically, it should be along, or they're located along a stream or waterway or drainage ditch or similar that typically has some kind of a certain width of buffer along it already. That buffer should be at a minimum 30 feet wide. If it is 50 feet, that's even better. That's kind of a typical width to have an efficient removal of nitrate. But it also requires to have that there should be stable banks along that waterway, because if they are too steep or if they're unstable, there could be issues with this, the bank sloughing when it becomes saturated, because that could make the soil less stable. On the other hand, the saturated buffer should be located at a place that's lower in elevation than the rest of the field. So if it is at the same elevation or higher, it might back up water or raise the water table in the field, and that could cause some crop damage. May also be concerns about the vegetation where the buffer is. If it is grass or other herbs or type vegetation, may be fine. But if we start getting into more of a woody perennial vegetation, especially a species that seeks out saturated conditions such as weeping willow, cottonwoods, and similar, we may see problems with the root intrusion into the distribution line. So therefore, preferably the distribution line should be located a distance away from any perennial woody vegetation. And then finally, also the soil itself will need to be able to support this denitrification process. And so that means that it will need to have a certain amount of organic matter in it. And typically we say about 1.2% organic or more is preferable. And it, by far most conditions, we do have that amount of organic matter in our soils, both in Minnesota and South Dakota. So that's usually not a problem, especially if it is a natural waterway where there is a riparian area along the stream or the waterway. There's typically a buildup of organic matter.
As Yaba mentioned, you know, not everywhere is ideal for a saturated buffer, right? If it's too high of slope or if it's too low of slope compared to the field, you don't have enough organic matter. And siting saturated buffers is one of the things, maybe one of the limitations, right? That
yeah,
maybe someone would look at a system and they want to put in a saturated buffer, but they don't know if it's a good place for it or not. And so Iowa actually has a saturated buffer siting tool. So it brings
in. Wow, that'd be really handy.
It would be really handy. It's really nice setup. It brings in different elevation data and things like that, and basically gives a color code of, is this full speed ahead, green light, caution, or don't put in a saturated buffer here.
We could use one of those in South Dakota.
We should do that. I think there's a grant opportunity there.
Definitely.
But the good news is, in general, saturated buffers, even with those limitations, are still a relatively flexible practice. And again, because they're inexpensive and because they're pretty high performing, wherever you have a place to put it, it makes sense to put it in.
It should be a common practice.
Absolutely. So we've covered a lot of saturated buffers today. Again, they're one of my favorite practices, but they're not perfect for everywhere. We brought out some of the challenges, but we'll dig more into these in our next episode. This will be it for episode 1, and stay tuned for the next episode, Saturated Buffers. Thanks for joining us today on Streamlines. We sure had a lot of fun today. Hope you did too. If you want to learn more about anything you heard today, head on over to the SDSU Extension website. But for now, I'm John McMain.
I'm Anthony Vly.
And we'll catch you next time.